Chapter 7. Terror, the Ecclesiarchal Palace. Mesrine had spent most of the journey from the Imperial Palace in private devotions aboard his sacerdotal skiff. The skiff was essentially a floating, fortified basilica garrisoned by zealot forces of the Fraternis Templar. Its nest of spires, minarets and steeples were carried above the ancient urban sprawl of the southern continent on antigravitic drives. Its progress past the colossal accretion of Hive Vostok was stately and honoured by the thousands of preachers lighting incense beacons atop shell shrines built into the western face of the Hive exterior. The Ecclesiarch briefly appeared at the observation balcony in the trappings of his office to acknowledge the 500,000 parishioners risking their lives in the creaking shrines to catch a glimpse of the High Lord. He took refreshment and rejuvenant in his private quarters before purification and then meetings with the Pontifex Luna on matters of cult importance and Archconfessor Yaroslav over revisions to his already considerable security detail. As the sacerdotal skiff made its final approach through a corridor of cloud-scraping bell towers, the ecclesiarchal palace rang with booming devotions. Banners and pennants streamed in the high-altitude winds, and the smoke from feast-day fires briefly engulfed the skiff. Below the roar of the anti-gravity engines, the courtyards and squares between the temple complexes and cathedrals were swarming with armies of freighters at prayer. Preachers and pontiffs creed-thumped their way through the ranks, shaking their ceremonial staffs and reading from ornate copies of the Lectitio Divinatus with priestly passion. Once again, Mesrine presented himself in the full ceremonial regalia of the Ecclesiarch and moved through a series of services with each of the Cardinals Palatine attempting to outdo the last in his feast day celebration. Only at the close of Cardinal Gormanski's final reading, that the Ecclesiarch slept through, his snores stifled by his savant priests, was Mesrine due to retire to his palace chambers. Mesrine bulldozed his way up the mountain of steps, the magnificence of his crozier clacking on the marble of each. As the Ecclesiarch went, trailing an entourage of vergers and sextons, crusader sentries of the Fraternis Templar went down on armoured knees. Up and along the grand stairs, a gauntlet of Vestal choristers sang haunting hymns to carry the High Lord to his great golden bed. As he passed a serene and pretty face that he liked, Mesrine paused. "My chambers," he said, jabbing the shaft of his crozier at a Vestal that had caught his jaundice eye. "To attend me at night prayers." He let his gaze travel to the young woman next to her. "You, my child, get to attend my chambers at dawn." Both postulants beamed their appreciation at the special selection, having little idea of the kind of attendance the Ecclesiarch required from them. As Mesrine ascended the last of the steps, he allowed his savant priests to take his mitre, staff and robes from his repugnant body. Two Auspex arches and Fraternis Templar sentinel posts later, the Ecclesiarch barked, "Just one!" The eruption prompted the gaggle of ushers, aides and savant priests to peel away, either to their own miserable cells or to make preparations for the High Lord's morning requirements. As Mesrine walked through the ornate archway of his grand chamber, with its antiquities and private opulence, he handed his remaining priest further layers of ceremonial vestments. By the time he reached the scepterwood table bearing the basin and pitcher of holy water, the Ecclesiarch was down to his undergown and rings. In silence, the savant priest deposited the garments on a nearby stand. "Would you have me wait half the night on your tardiness, sir?" Mesrine berated, prompting the priest to pour the water from a pitcher and into the marble bowl. The Ecclesiarch offered the priest his hands, at which the savant bowed and reverently kissed the pudgy backs of both. All right," Mesrine grumbled impatiently. The priest fell to removing the rings from Mesrine's fat fingers and depositing them on a pair of sculpted marble hands. Upon completion of this exercise, Mesrine placed his hands in the basin and washed his weary face. He snatched a towel from the attendant priest and dabbed his features dry. As the Ecclesiarch scrunched the hand towel up and prepared to toss it back at the savant, he found the priest admiring one of his many extravagant rings of office.
"How dare you? Mesrine rumbled, bringing the back of his hand up to correct the attendant priest. Damned insolence!
He marvelled as the priest proceeded to try the ring on for size. The savant priest's own arm came up with astonishing speed and violence. Within moments, the priest had the hand Mesrine was threatening to slap him with in a horrific lock. The ecclesiarch's features contorted beneath the fat of his face. The slightest twist of the priest's grip shot agony through the High Lord's trembling carcass. The priest admired the ecclesiarch's ring on the forefinger of his other hand. It was crafted in the likeness of the Adeptus Ministorum's holy symbol, inset with a tiny skull. The skull's eyes burned red, indicating that the ring was primed. Grabbing Mesrine by one of his many chins, the priest forced him back to the cold marble of the wall. Mesrine struggled, but then, as the priest twisted his arm further, subsided with a pained groan. The priest tapped his ring-adorned finger against the ecclesiarch's throat. Beautiful, he said simply, admiring the digital las weapon. Jokero, no? Mesrine managed a terrified nod. Careful now, the priest warned. I wouldn't want you to slit your own throat. Such craftsmanship should be employed in defence of your continued existence, not be the instrument of its ending. I'm sure you agree. This time, Mesrine signalled such agreement with a slow closing and opening of his yellowing eyes.
Who are you? Mesrine hissed through his agonies. What do you want?
Who am I?
The savant priest repeated. The savant priest, who had been chief attendant of the ecclesiarch for decades, who had been privy to his appetites and secrets, who had attended on Mesrine on board the sacerdotal skiff on the journey from the imperial palace, who had assisted the ecclesiarch in the bestowing of blessings upon the High Lords themselves in the Anisidoran chapel. And what do I want? The priest seemed to move something around in his mouth, and then proceeded to bite down hard. Mesrine watched in horror as the priest's face began to tick and to tremble. Like a stone cast into a still pool, his features rippled. A ghastly transformation took place before the ecclesiarch's fearful eyes. Long grey hair rained to the marble floor along with clumps of the priest's tangled beard. False lenses ran down the impostor's cheeks like tears, and a plastic film that had covered the priest's cracked and aged lips peeled away and fell to the floor like a strip of dry skin. With the localized polymorphine losing effect and the transformation complete, Mesrine beheld his uninvited guest.
Vangorich!
Yes.
Face to face with his foe, some of Mesrine's accustomed bluster returned.
This is an outrage, the ecclesiarch seethed. The High Lords will hear of this.
No.
Drakon Vangorich, Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum, told him with absolute certainty.
You asked me a moment ago what I wanted. What I want right now, Your Eminence, is for you to shut that interminable hole in your face. For if you do not, I shall save your shoulders the further responsibility of bearing the weight of your head. I shall then have one of the many operatives I have planted in your organization, studying your behavior and mannerisms, wear your flesh, and assume your responsibilities. Am I understood?
Mesrine considered the Grand Master's words, and once again confirmed his understanding with his eyes.
Here is what I need you to do, Vangorich told him. You will contact Lord Commander Udo and have him convene another unscheduled meeting of the 12. Just the 12.
And why would I do that?
Mesrine said. Aha! Vangorich reminded him, tapping his finger and digital weapon against the ecclesiarch's throat.
I do not want to be invited, but you can wager your life that I will be in there, just as I was today.
The Grand Master raised his dark eyebrows.
I need a good reason,
Mesrine said,
to justify that.
You have one, Vangorich returned. You will tell them that you slept uneasily tonight, that the loss of the Geronimus Fyodora Shrine Worlds weighed heavily on your mind, and that you have taken the destruction of the Fleur de Fides Cardinal World as a punishment, as a sign, an indication of the God Emperor's dissatisfaction with the High Lord's present course of action in the Rimwood sectors.
I will not take the Emperor's name in vain, Mesring hissed, and cheapen my faith with such falsehoods.
You will, Vangorich insisted. You do already, every day. Remember to whom you speak, Ecclesiarch. I have been your shadow for longer than you knew you had one. You will declare a war of faith. You will raise freighter militias and mobilize your Templar forces. Your priests across the Segmentum will preach this from the pulpits. This will all be done under a banner of sacred vengeance. The priests and people of Fleur de Fides will be avenged. You will use your influence with the Lord High Admiral, in light of the Adamantian atrocity, other devastations on the edge of the Segmentum, and your war of faith, to have him recall his fleets, armadas and flotillas, from the diversion of border actions and campaign crusades. To ensure the new Lord Commander militant and committed Astra Militarum forces have the full support of Navy warships and troop carriers. To redeploy our assets across the Segmentum in anticipation of Xenos invasion. These greenskin successes, their barbaric new technology, this self-named beast, these all add up to a credible threat, not to a single world or sector, but to the very core. The Imperium is in clear and present danger.
You are not qualified to make that determination, Mesring replied, and neither am I.
True, Vangorich admitted, but there are those among us who are. Those who know and have always known more about this threat to our imperial sovereignty amongst the stars, they are fearful. I look to their fear for guidance.
Then take some comfort from their interest and expertise, the Ecclesiarch said. If they act, then why need we?
You, Udo, Lansung, your inaction is defined by political advantage. They act in spite of you. But to no lesser advantage. Terrible things are done in the name of necessity. Besides, I don't have reason to trust any of you. You will do these things I ask, not because I have asked you, not because I have threatened you. You will do them because it is your duty. It is your hallowed responsibility to look to the safety and sanctity of the Emperor and his dominion. That is your only reason for being, Ecclesiarch.
Ransom is his own man. Mesring insisted. He will not allow his ambitions to be thwarted. I won't be able to convince him to abandon wars he is already fighting. He will not break up his armadas. I can't.
You can, and you will, Vangorich warned. Many claim you to be your own man also, with power and boundless ambition. Yet here I am, using what I have to apply pressure in the right places. You will do the same. Use what you have with Lansung, and find a way.
Why not remove Lansung?
Mesring suggested.
If he's the problem, assassinate and replace him instead. Leave me out of this.
As always, I will do what I must, the Grand Master admitted. But if the Segmentum is under threat from invasion, we are going to need Admiral Lansung and his strategic experience. It might surprise you to learn this, Your Eminence, but I don't really want to kill anybody. But as I said, sometimes terrible things are done in the name of necessity.
Say I agree to this, Mesring said with gravity. Say, for the sake of argument, that I even agree with the recall strategy. This degenerate Xenos beast, after all, is decimating my worlds, too. What's in it for me?
Vangorich gave the Ecclesiarch a look of smouldering scorn and disgust. His lips tightened.
Why, my Lord Mesring, you get to live, Vangorich told him.
The assassin became calmer and more dangerous with the Ecclesiarch's every incendiary suggestion.
A few minutes ago, I placed a toxin of unrivaled and agonizing lethality in contact with your skin.
Mesring frowned.
The devotion of a reverent kiss.
Mesring looked from Vangorich's lips to the backs of his hands, then to the floor, where the plastic strip, bearing the toxin, lay curled and abandoned after the assassin's transformation.
You poisoned me,
Mesring wheezed, trying to catch his breath.
You have 3 days to meet my demands, Vangarich told him. 3 days to meet with the High Lords, to use your leverage with Lansung, to have him issue the recall. 3 days, until you die on your knees, bleeding from your ears, nose, and eyeballs, praying for a mercifully swift and painless death you don't deserve from the God Emperor you have served so very poorly. Upon successful completion of my demands, one of my operatives will deliver to you the antidote. If you fail, there will be no such need to do so.
Vangarich released Mesring before slipping the Ecclesiarch's digital weapon from his finger.
I only have your word that I've been poisoned,
Mesring said weakly.
Or that there's an antidote if you have,
Vangarich reminded him with chill certainty.
Think of it this way. You put the same trust in me as I put in you.
You said that you didn't trust any of us.
Vangarich dropped the Jacaro ring into the basin of holy water. He smiled and shrugged his shoulders. He brought up the hood of his priestly robe and sank down into its darkness before walking away. Mesring's fat face was a nest of fury and confusion. Scrabbling through the water in the bowl, the Ecclesiarch found his weapon ring and slid it onto his little finger. Pointing the weapon at Vangarich's presented back, the High Lord thought on the toxin working its way through the pores of his skin, through his blood, and soaking slowly through his internal organs. He thought on the potential antidote in Drakan Vangarich's possession. The Ecclesiarch lowered his hand in defeat, and his eyes with it.
3 days!
Vangarich's voice echoed about the Ecclesiarch's cavernous private chambers. Mesring looked up, but the Grand Master of Assassins was gone.